you got away with it.
Yeah.
You thought you got away with hosting a show when I wasn't here. But guess who's back?
Guess who's back? Who's back again? Dad, I don't know the next line. It's Andy Friend.
Dad just walked into the room. He said, uh-oh, whose fucking Legos are these? Everybody left everything all over the floor. And it's about time to right the ship. I'm back, yes, baby.
Dad is back?
Dad's
question mark? Andy's
back. Okay, hey, everybody. I'm Andy.
Hey, Andy. Yes, thank you for allowing a show to be happening in your absence last week. I just didn't want to.
Oh, I was just waiting for you to say I'm Lisa.
I'm also Lisa.
And you're listening to Nice Court.
I have a rice sock around my neck right now. And I told him I threw out my neck and back today. And I was like, just a heads up that my brain and mouth aren't connected right now anymore. Oh. So this show will be awesome.
I get it. I mean, my neck and shoulder have had one of those rice bags that you throw in the microwave. It's been good for about the past 2 weeks. But before that, it was just like every week, at least like 4 days a week. I'm just a broken person, but.
I think
it's
just called being in our 30s, and I think it's just called being a 90s kid, which is to say we are appropriately charged to
30s court
to host a show called 90s court. So we are well. Andy, how are you, my dear? We missed you last week much.
Yeah. Hey, everybody. Thank you so much for your understanding and patience. That was weird. Just missing the week. But like I got into the building at the business that I'm opening and man, if you've ever opened a brick and mortar, like most people are like, oh, you just throw up a shop and stuff. I'm like, no, like it's just so much so insanely much that's happening. But I am so happy with how everything is going right now. I say that there's so much anxiety, but in reality, the feelings of the whole is that everything is way, way better than it should be, given how little thought or effort thought or consideration I put into this when I first started. So yeah, so things are going well. So I had to miss it because I was just absolutely slammed with the amount of stuff that I had to do this past week. So I appreciate the fact that you guys were able to step up and handle it. And a very interesting court case that I definitely wouldn't have done. So I'm glad that someone else could do it.
and special thanks to Gabriel for hopping onto the show. I know that was our first official guest host. And that was, it was a lot of fun. It was a wild, wild episode, but it was a lot of fun.
I did love, because I listened, obviously, and I love just like the amount of times you're like, oh, I hope Andy does it. I'm like, guys, it's fine. Like, I'm not... I literally was like, let's just not even do a show today. And you guys did one. So like, I have no room to complain about anything. The show is great. You guys did awesome. So,
well, I'm glad it got the Andy seal of approval.
The Andy C seal of approval. So
true dad.
So, hey, we got some shout outs to give out. I think I was actually supposed to do these and then I just left the word Lisa in there.
Do you want
to
do it?
So I'll go ahead.
I'm happy to let
it.
You do
so,
it.
So to our high ranking officials, first and foremost, Executioner Michael. Michael, who once had a handgun for a while, has upgraded to a shotgun and is just standing there at the door waiting for the next victim. So whoever loses this episode, we're just gonna just like yeet in front of Michael and he's just gonna pull like skeet shooting. So he's going to execute the whichever one of these Roald Dahl books loses. Roald Dahl book movies loses.
Okay, into it.
And to our judges who will judge away on things. I was going to say who judge who wins, but that's not true. Judge Troy, my man, thank you so much all the time. You're the best, and you rock. Judge David, you do judge a lot.
You do judge a lot. Judge David, you do judge a lot.
I love you,
love you.
I love you, David. You're the best. I felt so much rage from David after our Pizza Hut and McDonald's one. Because I, like, amongst other things, like, I'll say this. Like, I'll apologize for a lot of things. I won't apologize for this. I think McDonald's cookies are bad. And I'll stay on, but I will die on that.
Oh, they're so bad.
I'll die on that hill.
They're so bad.
Yeah. You can be nostalgic about things and still think that they're bad.
Absolutely.
In retrospect. But thank you, David. I appreciate your passion. How does that sound? I love your passion for things.
Yes,
and to our lovely, lovely bailiffs, Lindsay, you're the best. We don't hear from you anymore. Why don't you send us a message and just say, hey, because I like your energy, your goofiness, and your wildness, and I want to hear from you because you rock. Vincent, thank you for keeping Lisa in line. My understanding is that she gets out of control with her coffees and you keep her checked. And so I appreciate you doing that. Nate, you're a beautiful, handsome boy, and I appreciate that about you. That's all there is to that. So
and he's just feeling it tonight.
I'm looking forward to the moment because inevitably I will get a text from Nate saying, "Thanks for calling me a beautiful, handsome boy."
Whose day does it not make to be called a beautiful, handsome boy? Yeah.
And Jacqueline, you're lovely, and thank you so much for always chiming in on stuff and saying hey occasionally. You're the best, Tim. Mm-hmm. I'm not getting a Coca-Cola freestyle machine in my business, and I don't know what else to tell you. He thinks that we should do that, and I told him that it's never going to happen, but I wish it would. But
there
they do cost like six.
Like
they
that.
Cost like $6,000, and that's just not high on my priority list. But thanks for being that's a patron.
But thanks for your ideas, I guess.
And the man who needs no introduction, Preston. Preston, what can I say? You're the best, and you always everything you tag me in, I'm always happy that you do because it's always wonderful. Thank you for being you.
Amen to that.
So now that we got that out of the way, it's my turn to say things again.
It's still your turn. I love that. I love this energy tonight.
Yeah. So it's Andy's thing. And I'm going to talk to you guys today about something that is, well, let's just start off with this. 100% not invented in the 90s. The actual invention, the creation, all of that stuff, the general concept is super basic. So basic, in fact, that it's most likely been around in some way, shape, or form, for thousands of years.
What the hell?
So, the general concept of, you know what? I'm not going to say it because I don't want to spoil it. but in the 90s, I would say we finally had people committing to the bit and being like, "Hey, this is awesome, and we need to sell super awesome versions of this." And it's one of those things that you don't, it's not like you saw commercials for it. It was just something that, like, they upped their game on it so much and made it so baller that, like, every parent just had it. It was a cheap and affordable thing to get for kids. And it was literally awesome for every single age group. Now, I'm talking about Marble Run.
Marble Run. Okay.
Now, if you hear that name and you think, I don't know what that means, that's because it's not really like that's a brand name of it. But there are a million different rolling ball sculpture type of things. And essentially the concept was, the ancient concept is just, hey, why don't we have a ball that rolls on things and goes down holes and then goes down other things?
Those are my favorite things.
Yeah. So Marble Run, for those of you who are not picturing this, is... So a marble is involved, obviously, and then you have various, in the 90s at least, various plastic chutes and holes and like something that would look like a plastic tiny, I'm trying to think of like a bathtub, but then there's like a hole in it that the marble then goes down. And so you just, it's kind of like Legos. You put all these essentially giant Legos together and you build a very intricate, awesome combination of tubes. I can't think of another word for like an open tube. What's an open tube?
A funnel.
A bunch of holes. Let's see. Platforms, tubes, tunnels, holes, drops, wheels, etc. All of these things put together to create endless entertainment for child minds. And here's the thing. I was never that big into just building things for the sake of being like, wow, look how cool they look. The end. That's the end of the story. So things like this that had the building element, but also very much a mousetrap element in the sense that it's like mousetrap, but better. And for me, mousetrap, you know, like a Rube Goldberg machine type of game, basically existed for the purposes of just setting the trap off. Right. Like,
yes.
I don't know if I ever played a solid game of Mousetrap. And so really, this kind of pushed all the buttons that I needed for my child brain, for my boy brain, which was you and maybe another kid or your brother or whomever. You guys sit down for a very long period of time assembling thing, like, you know, tube after tube, from like going from layer to layer to layer, and it just keeps getting taller and taller. Sometimes it's like three-dimensional, going all over the place. And then at the end, you get this huge, amazing sculpture, and then you drop a marble on the top of it on the thing, and then you watch it just go down this series of tubes all over the place. And it's essentially the equivalent of biking up a hill for like half an hour, or even walking your bike up the hill for a half an hour and then going down in like 45 seconds.
Yes.
It feels insane and dumb, but it's so satisfying that you don't care.
100%. Now, I know that feeling 100%.
And I'll say this. I definitely am like, wow, that was super cool. I'm going to go do something else.
Mission accomplished,
Mission accomplished. And so I'll say that unless, of course, it fails. Like if it falls down somewhere, if it gets stuck, then I'm like, oh, we got to fix it and do it again. Then I'll keep doing it. But pretty much once I do it good and I'm like, look at how good I did, other person in the room. Because somebody's got to be in the room. Mom's got to be in the room. Somebody's got to see how cool it is.
Yes.
And I will say my first big flex of my life, it was kind of a weird flex, but okay, was drops. Do you know what I mean when I say a drop, Lisa?
You mean like from a high distance? So like maybe dropping the marble from a high distance into the funnel? Or
not even that. So the flex was, because if you just assemble it, you're like, this thing is designed to work, obviously. Like somebody who is smarter than me, like 5-year-old Andy or 10-year-old Andy or whatever, to put these things together in a way that they work. But what if it just dead ends all of a sudden at a place, and then I start building like a foot lower with other stuff, and so it goes through the hole and drops like a foot and then hits the next thing below it and then keeps going.
Oh,
you know what I'm saying?
Oh, so, yes, like, I know exactly what you're saying.
Because like rather than going down a tube, which is guaranteed to work, instead it's like I'm just gonna Jesus take the wheel on this and watch it just go, because those are the ones where like that's where eventually it got to with me and my friends, was that we would get to the point where we're like, I'm gonna see if we can make this work. And so when it did, and you pulled off, because that's the thing, it didn't work a lot of the time, most of the time I would say, because it would just hit and then just like bounce off or something, but when it worked, it was just like a fuck yes moment, but a like an 8-year-old fuck yes moment, because you didn't say fuck.
And no, but those are the most important moments, because they're genuine. There are not a lot of things I can master at this phase of my life, but I mastered this, and I fucking kicked so much ass. Thank you very much.
Yeah, it's basically like starting a business, except, you know, like that kind of a, like excitement, like running around, like I did it, except instead it was just, you know, making a ball fall a distance and then landing another thing. So you felt like a goddamn sorcerer when you finished it. So now, I will say this. This is approved for ages 4+. So basically over the age of 3. That being said, if, let's say, Christmas Day, I woke up, 36-year-old Andy. Okay. I go and I open a present, and it's just a massive collection of these. I am not questioning for a second. I'm going to go put something together. Like, I'm literally going to. Like, I literally, I might not be super entertained by it for a long time, but damn, would I still enjoy doing it. Yeah, I would do that right now. Like, I just thought of that, and I was like, I want these now. Now, that being said, then I'll be like, wow, I have to clean these up.
Which is less
fun. And I want to put them in my toy chest, because mom will yell at me if I don't put them away.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I still think this is dope, and I just, again, I know they had versions of this probably way before the 90s and everything like that, but the high quality plastic ones and everything like that, with the huge drops and the like very interesting like pinwheels and all these different things, and various little tubes and like crazy slides and stuff, that was so 90s, so dope, and I just wanted to bring it up because it made me happy.
Okay, are you ready to hear
please
a very sad story about this? I've never gotten to play with these.
But why did everybody hate you as a kid?
I don't know how this happened. This is one of those toys that I know exists and mm-hmm. I know is amazing, and I never got to play with it. And I like to sure. this day, as an adult, I know this is something that I so deeply missed out on, and it eats me to the, like it eats my soul every day. I'm just like, I should have gotten a chance.
Yeah. Like I'm looking at this picture of a kid standing there with a marble holding it, and I'm like in my brain, picturing where it's gonna go and like following it like in my mind, like, and I'm just like, wow, that's fucking dope.
I think the thing that happened was that by the time I actually got the chance to be around one, I was mm-hmm. a little bit older, and I did not feel comfortable. Like there were younger You're kids around, cool. yeah. and I was like, well, it's not that I felt too cool. It's I was self-conscious to be like, I can't play with this if this is for like little kids. Like I need to make sure that the little kids get to play with it. Unless Aww. I never got to play with
That's
this.
That's so weirdly considerate of you as a child.
Well, I mean, I'm a weirdly I'm a weird person, but weird sure. child, I suppose, as well. But damn, yeah, these are. I remember seeing these at like daycares and stuff like that, mm-hmm. or like especially at the church I went to growing up. They had these in like the preschooler room. Oh, yeah.
No, jealous. Dude, like yeah. So if you ever need ideas for little kids, this is
it's that.
Yeah, I mean, and the thing is it. I am surprised at how low the age is, because I feel like those marbles could very much be eaten. But I guess a marble would be digestible. It just
absolutely. Just, well, I think from the time that you and I have spoken last for the show, my daughter, who is 3 and a half, put a Barbie doll microphone up her nose,
hey.
And I had to do the like mother's kiss thing where you blow it out of the other nostril. And I was like, yeah, kids are still they still do this shit. So
that's the first I've heard of the mother's kiss thing, and that's
you cover their mouth, mm-hmm. you cover their mouth. Just real quick, you cover their mouth. Mm-hmm. The mm-hmm. the unoffending nostril, the one that is unplugged. Mm-hmm. You put your mouth. No, I'm
Lisa,
sorry.
Lisa,
I'm sorry.
I get it. I'm saying I didn't know the term. I picture exactly what's happening in the process. So you're good. But thank you so much.
I said it backwards. You don't cover their mouth. That sounds like you're
Then they just stop breathing until they stop moving. And then
it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what's up their nose. Problem solved. It's a really rough way to take care of something.
Whatever they're
small.
Upset about, it's over.
It's not mad anymore. Listen, okay, my yes. thing. Yay. I want to talk to you today about some of my favorite toys of the 90s, bar none, one of my hands down, like, we'll never forget how amazing mm-hmm. this was. And it was a toy that was born from, of all things, are you ready for this? A gasoline additive.
What?
In 1995, Chevron introduced Techron. A gasoline additive that cleans and protects engines, okay? And I remember to this day how significantly amazing the marketing was for this. And so I went to the Chevron website. I looked this up. They worked with Young and Rubicam, an ad agency, I want to say out of New York, to tell people about it, and Y&R made it happen. And they were like, listen, we have like, but who wants to hear about this? Like who the fuck cares about an engine, like a gasoline additive? Who cares? It's like, well, they don't want to be told by a person. What if they were told by a car? So they teamed up with the company that did Wallace and Gromit, the creators of Wallace and Gromit, and they created the most amazing little stop motion cars. Do you remember these things? They had eyes and big teethy grins.
Lisa, you haven't said anything about what this is or any. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Because I'm getting there. I'm getting okay. there.
So no, Chevron, I don't know because, yeah, sorry.
So Chevron made, they're the commercials. The commercials that they had were like the stop motion claymation Wallace and Gromit style cars with the big smile and the big eyes, and they would talk to you. And so just look up like Chevron 90s.
I thought you were talking about a toy, so I was...
I am talking about a toy. I'm getting there. I am talking about a toy.
Okay, yes. I'm looking at them now, and
yes,
I do know
so,
what you mean.
Yes, so the cars had big eyes, big grins, and they would talk in a pretty funny, casual way about like the state of the insides of their car, but they were always keen to talk about the inside of their engines and how clean that was. And the cutest thing about these commercials didn't revolve around what the cars were saying at all, but in pure Wallace and Gromit fashion, it focused on the funny little things happening elsewhere in the commercial when they spoke. But the coolest thing about this ad campaign was that they eventually further monetized this idea by creating and selling toy-sized versions of those cars from the commercials inside of Chevron.
What?
So somehow, somehow my mother, we were not very well off at all, but my mother would buy me a few of these. And so I remember, I distinctly remember going into, she would be like, well, go look and see which one they have. And I'd go into Chevron and I'd see which one of the toy cars they would have in stock. Cause there were only like three or four that were in heavy rotation, and maybe they'd have a cooler one. They had a lot of them, but they only had some that were in heavy rotation. If I already had one, well, then I can't buy a second one. But I would go buy these, and it was just, it was the coolest shit. I had the green Wendy wagon. She was for sure my favorite one. She was like a station wagon. Wendy wagon toy. I had her, and I had Tony Turbo. I know. Look, I mean, like, you may have had Marble Run.
Dude, and the door is open, and the doors pops. Open. Holy shit.
All of this stuff happens. Like, I had at least one or two. Maybe I had at least two. I maybe had one more, but I for sure had the red Tony Turbo and the Wendy wagon. And I spent so many hours of my childhood playing with these toys. Because, like, if you rolled them, but, like, you pressed down while you rolled them, their eyes would blink and wink, and like what? The fact that their doors open, I think I put Lego men inside the cars.
Chevron, you put all so much money into these fucking toys.
So much. And I even looked it up because there was like a lot of them on eBay for going for like $700. And I was like, motherfucker, I would. Don't tempt a bitch, because I would. I would buy this shit out of this lot of cars. But the I distinctly, what's so specially tied to this toy for me is that my mother is and always has been a nurse. And for a long stretch of her career, she was a home health nurse. Mm-hmm. And I would go with her on these calls, but I couldn't go into the houses. So I would stay in the car, because in the 90s, who cares? Kids are just cars unattended for like an hour at a time. But I remember sitting in the car while she's doing a home health visit, and I'm playing with these cars like I do not want the day to end, because I was like, this is the best. I'm alone in a car playing with this car. This is the best thing that's ever happened to me. No one can see me. Oh, so many layers of how special these cars were to me. Inception level cars. Oh, yes. I'm surprised I didn't have like a small Lego car inside the car. Inside a car. And maybe Earth is a car too. Who knows? But it was just me with Mariah Carey and this car outside in the middle of nowhere, like Waxahachie, Texas, back when it wasn't as cool as it is now. And just like, ugh, this is the coolest shit ever. But these cars are the greatest. They scratch a particular, like, I wanted all of these things at a toy. I took my kids to an antique mall yesterday, and they picked out cars that had opening doors. I was like, sold. The fact that the doors open are perfect. You say, say no more, fam. I'll pay whatever you want.
Like, no, the door, like parts that open and move like that on cars is, it's just like, it's adds so much to it. Like you said, and I don't know why it like you said, scratches that itch or whatever, but for some reason it makes me feel like I will touch it and do stuff with it versus like normal car. I'm like, look at that.
It's a car. But the door opening unlocks a totally different layer. But that's my thing. I'm actually curious to know, because I've never heard anybody else talk about these as a thing. I wonder if anyone out there.
I hope so, because like them. I didn't either. But these are like look like way, way nicer than I would have expected for a Chevron, like just like thing that they sell these. Yeah, they sold them. Mm-hmm. I'm sure. Wow. This is super dope. I'm jealous of your poverty cars.
Yeah, well, don't worry. You had.
I only mentioned it because you kept saying, "Yeah, you're like because we weren't well off."
We were not well off. But so it always amazes me this stuff to be like, man, she really like made time. She made sure I got something like that sometimes to be like, thank you know. So it was a really special toy.
Sure.
Whenever I got to get one, but anyway, that's my thing. Digging deep. Look, Chevron cars.
Wendy Ta-da. Wagon.
Tony Turbo?
And somebody taxi car guy?
They were pretty cool.
Awesome.
Pretty damn cool. But anyway.
Well, hey, we both did toys. That was cute.
Yeah, toys, man. Look at us digging back. So we need to take a break.
Yes.
Poll results from last week in which you were not even involved.
And I will say, you know what? We'll tell you after the break.
We'll see. We'll talk about it after the break. We'll see you in a few.
Stay tuned.
Hey, 90s Court listeners, Lisa here. I'm here to talk to you really quickly about a product that I absolutely love and I've used every single day for years and years and years. Let me hit you with a couple of scenarios. Perhaps you're miserable because your partner snores like crazy. Or maybe you're a night shift worker who can't get proper sleep during the day. Or maybe you live in a really loud and busy downtown area. There's hope for you, and it comes in the form of sleep phones from Acoustic Sheep. I'm not lying when I say I've been using them religiously for years, and they're the sole reason I'm not a crazy person suffering from insomnia. Sleep phones are just ultra-soft headphones and a headband that are extremely bed-friendly. Side sleepers can also rejoice, for you can comfortably block out the sounds of the world while getting some soothing, noise-free sleep without hurting your ears. They even have wireless Bluetooth options, so you don't get tangled up in cords overnight. I personally connect mine to my phone each night and listen to some white noise to drown out my partner's snores. I'm telling you, I've gifted them to night shift nurses, in-laws, basically anybody with ears that values a good night's sleep. They even have options now that come preloaded with binaural beats or deeply relaxing ASMR content. So you can find something that's just right for you and maybe not even have to connect to your phone at all if you don't want to. Andy and I both use these now, and we'd love to help you get some rest too. Go to sleepphones.com and use the code 90scourt to get $10 off your order of $39 or more. That's sleepphones.com, and the code is 90SCOURT. Sweet dreams. Andy just hurt himself.
We do claps when we start everything to sync the audio, and I clapped the microphone real hard. I said the word ow when in actuality I didn't hurt myself at all. I just realized that was probably a very loud noise on Lisa's end.
Oh, you know, why do we do that? Why do we always say ow when we've not actually hurt ourselves? I've noticed this is like a thing kids
do. Yeah, I was going to say kids, but yeah, definitely Andy's as well.
Definitely Andy's as well. Listen, welcome back, guys. We have poll results from last week.
We made it. Now, I'm going to say, I have a confession to make. So in my, like, here's the thing. I'm aware that other people are very busy, and I feel bad, but just like, this past week, I just forgot, gang, I goofed. I never put a thing up on Twitter. I didn't do anything on Twitter this week. I didn't do anything general for the podcast this week. So you're getting poll results from Instagram and from Facebook, because those are the ones that Lisa did. So
yeah. Well, but yeah, if you weren't involved in the episode, it makes total sense that it would have just been like, this didn't happen.
But it just occurred to me. I was like, Lisa couldn't. I don't think she doesn't even know the login to Twitter, so she couldn't even get in there if she wanted to. So, Lorena Bobbitt versus Monica Lewinsky.
Woo!
A wiener or a cigar?
What was the best comment someone left on Instagram? Holy shit, it was the best one.
It was probably Troy's, but I can't remember what it was. But
I'll look it up. I'll look it up while you're doing results. Yeah.
So, this was a close one. I mean, and here's the thing. It's such a weird thing to gauge, because it's like, which of these do you like better? You're like, what, which of these weird scandals that are just memorable do you remember? I don't know. They both are weird. Facebook had an opinion, 55% to 45%, Lorena Bobbitt. People were just like love those dicks exiting the body. Instagram was like, we're not as big on that. We still are kind of big on people's wangs getting cut off, but we also like sexy times. True. That went 58% to 42% Monica Lewinsky. Twitter,
which is not great,
which couldn't break the tie or do anything, didn't exist. So the final, we added the votes up between the two, came out 51.7% to 48.3% Monica Lewinsky.
Bada bing, bada boom. I guess.
I did write Monocle Lewinsky, which is...
you're thinking about monocles.
Because monocles is delicious and tasty. Do you guys have monocles down there?
No, but I have been to Illinois enough that I've had monocles. Illinois. And it is tasty.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's hit or miss, but when it's hit, it's super, super hit.
It hits real right, yeah.
You know what else hits?
What?
Books. The best part is you can just say things that aren't true, but they're like, that was a clever stinger, even though books don't hit at all. They just are. So.
They just are. And you either read them or you don't. Or if you're like Lisa, you for sure don't.
for sure don't. Hey, gang, this week we wanted to do, we wanted to do movies because we kind of do movies every other one or whatever. And so I was like, let's do, I was looking through and I was like, you know what? Matilda rules. I love that movie. And then I was thinking what to pair with it. I'm like, oh, what about another Roald Dahl book? So so we did Matilda versus James and the Giant Peach, the movies, because ain't nobody got time to read books right now. Come on, guys. Not in less than a week. Not right now. So no. I decided to let, even though I love Matilda the most, I mean, I love it. I don't want to say the most, but I love it. I decided to let Lisa watch it because I was like, I bet you and your kids might enjoy this. So I watched the other one, which is James and the Giant Peach. But Lisa's going first, so let's hear about Matilda.
Yes, or as I like to call it, child abuse induced telekinesis.
That's what you do. You just beat them up enough and eventually they get magic powers. That's basically every Roald Dahl book.
That's the most, yeah, if you just abuse a child enough, if you abuse and neglect a child enough, they will become a superhero.
Or own a chocolate factory.
Or own a chocolate factory. Yeah, well, he wasn't beat up. He was just poor. That's poor. That's a different form of accident, unintentional.
It's weird abuse, yeah.
So Matilda dropped on August 2nd, 1996. It had a budget of $36 million and had a box office of $33.5 million, so it lost money.
Whoa.
This cast includes some real bangers. Mara Wilson as Matilda Wormwood. Danny DeVito as her father, Harry Wormwood. Uh-huh. Rhea Perlman as Zinnia Wormwood, her mother. Imbeth Davids, which is a crazy name. She's the teacher, Miss Honey. And Pam Ferris as Miss Trunchbull.
Yeah.
Trunchbull. That was a name. Now, okay. I don't believe I ever saw Matilda until yesterday. And although I'm not entirely sure, because there was one scene that I was like, okay, hold on. This is tickling my brain a little bit. Maybe I have seen this, but we'll get to that. But so at the beginning of this movie, they are in the hospital and they're introducing Danny DeVito's character to the new baby, Matilda. And he's like, yuck. And then as they leave the hospital, he just like yeets her into the back of the station wagon. And he was just like, whatever. And they're pissed off about, you know, a bar of soap that the mom had to get for, you know, taking a bath in there. And like, when he saw her, he was just like, this baby sucks. And then, but like shortly thereafter, we could see from an early age that this baby was crazy smart, like writing her name in baby food and whatnot. But she also from an early age had to take care of herself because her parents were totally super self-absorbed and total assholes. And they were leaving her home alone at 4. Like, I know it's a movie, but in my head I was just like, oh, shit, that's not okay. That's super not okay. But it was in the 90s where, you know,
I feel like Roald Dahl probably just got the shit kicked out of him as a kid. It just feels like that was just like, because there's just so much child abuse, and even just in the two that we did here.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And so she approaches her father, Danny DeVito, one day, you know, being like, hey, I want a book. And he's like, get lost, you fucking nerd. And so she looks up how to get to the library herself at like 4 years old, 4 or 5 years old, and just walks there. And over the years, you know, she just begins to read like every book at the library, and she would go there and read them, and then she'd start checking them out and taking them home and whatnot. And then one day she asked her father if she could go to school. And her parents were like,
what an insane question to ask. Like, can I go to school? So weird.
Because I remember thinking up to this point in the movie being like, oh, you know, she's just like going to the library all day every day. Doesn't she have school? Well, and then immediately thereafter, they were like, oh, I want to go to school. And they're like, why would you want to do that? We have TV and we need someone to sign for our packages here. And so that was their thing. And so at one day at the dinner table, she answers this insanely hard math question without flinching, and thinking that she was cheating, her father, Harry, tells her that bad people get punished, not bad children, which is what he really meant to say. So she learned that day that people who do bad things, aka her parents, get punished. Mm-hmm. So to begin punishing him, she like took his hair tonic and replaced it with hydrogen peroxide, and Whoa. It turned his hair like a funny blonde color, uh-huh. which is fun. I'm sorry, I wrote this was kind of like stream of consciousness notes here, but there was one point he was inviting their son to go with him to the used car lot that he works at, and he says a line, today we diddle the customer.
What?
And I don't know. I wrote that down because I was like, that's a very like Always Sunny in Philadelphia kind of line. Today we diddle the customer. So Danny DeVito's just been a wild character longer than I knew. But also I put in giant caps, Pee Wee Herman is an FBI agent. The FBI is staked out at his house watching Matilda's dad because they know that he's selling stolen car parts at his used car lot. So,
oh my gosh, Pee Wee Herman is in this.
He is. Yeah. His name is not Pee Wee Herman. His name is Paul Rubens.
Paul Rubens.
Yeah. And so after going to his used car lot and discovering that her father was a crook, she super glued his hat to his head. Like put glue on the inside of the brim, and then he put it on his hat. They went to this super fancy dinner, and it gets glued to his head, and it's a whole shit show. But after this happens, he gets fed up with her reading and forces her to watch this stupid funny like fucking Sticky Money show, and she gets so mad that she, you know, while he, because he's like holding her face and making her, like, this is a very uncomfortable scene as a parent to be like, this is not okay. But as he's forcing her to watch this, she gets so mad looking at the stupid show that she makes the TV explode.
That's right. Yeah. She has magic powers. She's Harry Potter.
Yeah, she's neglect powers. So at this point, she realizes that she's unlocked a portion of her brain not previously accessible because of all the reading and all the learning and everything that she's been doing. So the next day, her father, Harry, meets a super strict teacher from that school. And this teacher hates kids. I'm sorry, she's a principal. She hates kids. And she's there at his used car lot to get a car. And he's like, hey, I got a car for you. Also, I got a piece of shit kid for you, too. My daughter. Wow, she's a real piece of shit. And so he's like, she can go to your horrible school because you hate kids, too. And she was like, awesome. And that's when this movie basically turns into Child Abuse the movie.
I love hurting children.
Because, like, Trenchbull, the principal, played by Pam Ferris, basically is like, we open at the scene of them all outside of the school, and she's just walking around with like a horse whip, like you know, antagonizing children and bullying them. And then she sees this little girl with braids and takes her and swings her, I think, by the braids, and then releases her, and she almost is going to get impaled on this fence, which is so horrifying. And then Matilda, with her powers, is able to stop her and rescues her, and she ends up just like sliding on some grass and picking flowers. It is fine. But in the middle of all this like awful school situation where we're watching Miss Trenchbull ruin everyone's lives, we meet Matilda's teacher, Miss Honey, who is like the sweetest woman ever.
Yeah.
And immediately identifies that Matilda is brilliant. She does some like crazy math problem right off the bat. I actually thought that this was not Rachel McAdams. What the hell is that actress's name? Well, it's not on the top of my head, so I'll never get there in time for the show. But she was, nope, I won't get there in time.
It's okay.
But she, it's okay. But she approaches the principal, Miss Honey does, and she was like, she's too smart for my class. I think she needs to be with some older kids. And the principal is like, you're bullshit, and you just don't want to handle her, and you're lazy. She was like, no, that's not it.
That sounds right. That sounds like me.
Yeah, that's, wow. You nail on the head there, Teach. And so she was like, no, never mind. I will take her. I will keep her in my class. And then, side note, Miss Trenchbull has a dartboard in her office with children's school pictures on it. Like, they did an incredible job making this woman seem like a psychopathic child abuser, like loathes children. They did a really good job not only casting Pam Ferris for this, but it is Pam Ferris, right? Yeah, Pam Ferris for this. But also she did it. I think I read that she stayed in character even when the film had broken for a little bit, just to scare the kids even further. I was like, she's terrifying, like no makeup on, weird shit on her teeth, like a super tight bun, and like almost like a military garb. It's just, they did a great job with her and making her intimidating. So Miss Honey goes to Matilda's house and is like, hey, your kid is brilliant. And they're like, shut up. You're ruining the TV show that we're watching. Also, you're college educated, which means you're hippie trash. Get out of my house. They're really cool parents. And so at school the next day, this is the scene I remember. There's this horrible sequence where it's the where the principal Trunchbull makes a chubby kid eat an entire enormous chocolate yes. cake in front of the entire student body. And like, I weirdly remembered almost all of this scene. So I'm like, have I seen this? What's going on here? But this scene in particular really stuck out to me. There's just this giant crazy cake and he's getting really sick, you know, start trying to eat of, you know, eat as much of it as she could. But then Matilda was like, start cheering him on, and then, you know, cheers erupted, and then the principal got mad. He finished the cake, and then the principal was like, everyone stays 5 hours late, which is a crazy thing to do to elementary age children.
Parents are like, hey, like, we, like, it's fucking 10 p.m. and my kids are not home. This is problematic.
But don't worry, because Matilda's parents could not care less.
Yeah, her parents.
Literally could not care less, so they're insanely bad. But again, I think all the kids that are there are like sent there from families equally shitty. So it's kind of nightmarish. But
was it Sarah Paulson, by the way?
Paulson is who I'm thinking of. And it is not that. Thank you.
Because I looked up. I was I searched the actress and I was like, that woman looks like, and I searched American Horror Story. I was like, nope, not Sarah Paulson. So anyways.
Yeah. Thank you. Uh-huh. Thank you. So this is when we discover that Miss Honey is actually connected to Trunchbull, that Trunchbull is actually Miss Honey's mother's stepsister.
So many words.
Yeah. So Miss Honey had a mother and father. The mother was a stepsister to Miss Trunchbull. And so Trunchbull came to live with their family when Miss Honey's mother was sick, and then she died shortly thereafter. And then they also suspected that Trunchbull killed Miss Honey's father too. Like they said he died under mysterious circumstances, said it looked like a suicide, but then he apparently left everything to Trunchbull as opposed to Miss Honey. Yeah, it's a whole thing. Anyway, so there's this whole scene where they're back in Trunchbull's house, because this used to be Miss Honey's house, trying to get some of her belongings back. But Trunchbull comes home suddenly and they barely get out of the house. It's a whole thing. The next day, Matilda goes back and uses telekinesis to get some of Miss Honey's things back. But she accidentally leaves behind her hair ribbon, which clues off Trunchbull to be like, you did this. So she comes after Matilda the next day in class. And like every time Trunchbull, I left out a sequence earlier where there was like a newt inside of some water. And oh, something, but every time Trunchbull goes into the classroom, it is legit terrifying. My kids were dying laughing. She's so sweaty. I think they took like makeup remover plus and were like, if you ever have makeup on, we have removed that aspect of your life. You just look very earthy, I guess. I don't know. It's wild. But
we've removed all your natural complexion as well. We've just absorbed all of your pigments.
Yes. So, where am I? This is the big scene in the movie where Matilda is being, you know, Trunchbull's coming after her. Matilda uses her powers to write on the chalkboard to make it seem like Miss Honey's dead father is accusing Trunchbull of murdering him, which freaks her out. But then she starts like attacking all of the kids in the classroom. And then Matilda uses her powers to protect the rest of the class and scares Trunchbull out of town, leaving Miss Honey's old house open for her to move back in. Hooray.
Yay.
But now Paul Reubens and the FBI agents that have been pursuing Matilda's father are really after him. So they go to get... So
we got to get going.
Exactly. Miss Honey and Matilda have really bonded because someone actually cares for this super amazing, brilliant little kid. And so they're like, hey, get in the car. We got to go. We're going to Guam. Get the hell in the car. And she was like,
can I just have your child instead?
Yeah. Yeah. And Miss Honey was like, why don't you just leave her here with me? And they were like, cool. And they just had like adoption papers ready to go.
Yeah. Like literally Matilda just like had it like on hand, like waiting any second.
Yeah. And they were like, okay, cool. That's fine. And he literally used the back of Matilda to sign the paperwork. And they were like, nah, that's good. And so they just signed her. They signed over parental rights, and I'm just like, Jesus Christ. They're like, whatever. Anyway, we're out of here. And But you know what? Miss Honey becomes the new principal of the school, and they live happily ever after, fully abandoned by everyone that they love. Hooray. Trivia.
Yep.
Sadly.
Uh-oh.
Truly, but sadly, Mara, Matilda's character, or actress who played her, her mother, her actual real mother, died of breast cancer during the filming of this movie. But she persevered and finished the film. And I read later that, like, she was upset because she didn't think that her mom... Huh?
What a truly impossible fucking thing. That's wild.
For a girl this age? Jeez. I don't know how old she was. I would say, like, what? 8 to 12?
I guess she would have done... Because she was in, like, Mrs. Doubtfire before that. But, yeah, she was super young when this was going on.
Super young. And so I read that she was upset thinking that... You know, I think she passed before the film debuted. But Danny DeVito was like, no, don't worry. We actually showed her a cut of it, you know, slightly unfinished. But we made sure she got to see it. And so that was a really nice thing. So,
real quick. She was born July 24th, 1987, which makes her 2 years younger than us.
34.
So in 96, so, she would have been like nine years old. Yeah.
Yeah, 9 to 8. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow. Mm-hmm. So, yikes. So, in a sweet one, Mara was so self-conscious about dancing in this one scene for the movie that Danny DeVito rallied everyone on the cast and crew to dance with her on set during that scene. Is that not the sweetest
shit? Danny DeVito is just like, I don't hear like a lot of stories about him, but every time I do, it's always just the most adorable thing ever.
I know. And they were even saying that like he and Rhea Perlman had actually gotten really close to Mara during the filming of this movie, which is hard to believe because they were so deeply cold and dirty and awful to her during the filming of this. So, in the movie. So to hear that was just like, oh, thank God. Maybe her, you know, little brain wasn't ruined by this, but also really interesting in the scene where the chalk writes on the chalkboard, whenever Matilda's controlling the chalk, Danny DeVito revealed that they wrote the letters backwards on the opposite side of the chalkboard and then put a magnet on the chalk that was
sort being magic.
Wow. Sorcery. Oh, I just knocked my headphones off. Well, that was magic. So
that was magic.
That was magic. But that's Matilda. It was actually I watched it with my kids last night. They were howling with laughter.
And
I was just like, whoa, you guys really like this. And I tried showing them Beethoven and they were like, this movie sucks.
I forgot about Beethoven. Oh, we gotta come at some point.
I know. Man. I was like, well, let's just keep the ball rolling on the 90s movies. They were like, two thumbs down. Yeah. I was like, oh,
Matilda's a good one. Beethoven was kind of, yeah.
Exactly. But that's Matilda. And I don't know anything about James and the Giant Peach, so I am ready. All right. I'm ready.
James and the Giant Peach. So yet another book, because it's wild to me thinking about how many Roald Dahl books we really read, like, as a kid, like, in various grades, like, the BFG, you know, this, Matilda, with the witches, you know, Charlie and Shock Effect. It's just so many books by them that were read. I'm sure others as well, but those are the ones that come to mind.
Pause. BFG is not a book or film I'm familiar with. It is a film that has recently come out, and I see it at, like, when I take my kids to the dentist's office, it's always playing, and it's always, like, at the beginning when they show the BFG, and I'm just like, that is an acronym for something not good.
It's Big Friendly Giant, but
I know it's Big Friendly Giant, but I'm like, you can't say that. You can't say that. Anyway, go ahead, James and the Giant Peach. I'm sorry.
Anyway, I did want to say I was reading. Let me look this up. Matilda movie. Some of the they always have like these things like people also ask, and then it says like the first thing is Matilda a true story?
Oh my gosh!
It's number one question. Sorry, I just needed to throw that out there.
Amazing.
All right. James and the Giant Peach. So apparently, Roald Dahl films, not so great at the box office. 1996 film, budget $38 million. Box office $37.7 million.
Okay.
Which makes you ask the question, how do you spend $38 million on this fucking film? On either one of them, I mean, it's wild to me just thinking about how much that is and thinking about how many movies I've heard of that were very, very good that had $10 million budgets or whatever. Either way, apparently, like, both of them crushed on Rotten Tomatoes. Yours was a 90% fresh. Mine's 91% fresh. So, I mean, like, people enjoyed the movies or at least all, like, said, hey, this is worth watching. Not necessarily that it's great, but at least that it was worth, you know, not bad. Based on the 1961 novel by Roald Dahl, produced by Denise DeNovi and Tim Burton, very evident, and directed by Henry Selick. Yeah, the Tim Burton aspect is very clear when you see the claymation and everything. So it's weird because it's, having seen this movie, when I was in fourth grade, we had read this book. And I will say this, my fourth grade class was still the most epic class of all time. We had the best teacher, who's still my favorite teacher I ever had in all, every grade. And it was like all of my friends, like every person that was like awesome was in that class. And I was so, so very happy to be in that class. And I remember that this movie came out that year and we all got signed up as that class to go to the movie theater to watch this movie.
No way.
Yeah. And so I just, I always remember that because it was such a wild thing thinking about, like, that's a weird, like, I guess I just, it's been so long since I've been in school, like that kind of school, that it just seems wild to have a school class just go to a movie.
Yes, it is very odd to have that happen.
It was a short movie, though, which was good. I appreciated that. It was an hour and 24 minutes. So this one was a lot more potable. But it's weird because it's, I didn't remember that this movie started out as live action. I thought it was just all claymation. But it's a mixture of live action and claymation, not at the same time. It just starts out like it's kind of like, you know, a Wizard of Oz type thing where it changes during the movie.
Okay.
Yeah. So includes voices such as Simon Callow as Mr. Grasshopper, Richard Dreyfuss as Mr. Centipede, awesome. Jane Levy as Mrs. Ladybug, Susan Sarandon as Miss Spider, and David Thewlis as Mr. Earthworm. Once upon a time, James is living on this absurdly tiny beach with his parents in this tiny little house, but it's like, it's clearly like they do like a very miniature, almost like a lot of these things are like, almost like you're at a theater, like using theater sets because they're all very basic, but it'll be like this small like beach that they're living on. So it's very clear like, wow, they're living on like a paradise or whatever. And they're on the, you know, the side of the ocean or whatever. And there's this very cute little house that they're living in. And this entire scene lasts roughly like 2 minutes, maybe. And they're all very, very happy. James is there with his parents and they're like, one day we're going to go to New York City because that's going to be amazing. And they're like, whoa. And they see this picture of the Empire State Building. And then they literally seconds later, the narrator's like, but then his parents were gobbled up by a hungry rhinoceros. And now James lives with his two aunts. So that was like very abrupt. And you see this rhinoceros, quote unquote, there's this huge cloud that's like shaped like a rhinoceros and it's like thundering and lightning. And it's a really scary, ominous thing. So I don't know. But apparently in the movie, this is a very fantastical, over the top movie. So a lot of stuff is intentionally wacky, weird, and crazy. So the idea of being eaten by a rhinoceros apparently is just normal shit compared to the rest of the stuff that's going to happen in this movie. Mm-hmm. So he lives with his two aunts. And guess what? His aunts just like to put him to work, be mean to him, and beat the shit out of him. So so we have that in common. Again, Roald Dahl, are you okay? So James is like, you know what would go down real smooth? Going to New York City. So he's obviously just thinking about that constantly and looking at like pictures of the Empire State Building and just wanting to go because he's just getting his ass worked off constantly and his aunts are dicks. So continue live action James being sad and his aunts sucking montage. and then we suddenly cue James singing a song in his room about like things that he'd like to do. And it's not very good. And I remember thinking, like, you could have just put in a voice actor. Like, you could have just put in a singing actor that was good. But instead, you were just like, no, we're just going to make it bad.
Really?
Yeah, it just wasn't a very good. I mean, this is a musical, kind of, too. I forgot to mention that. There's several musical numbers in this. None of them, like, I'm not saying the songs are bad. And later on, like, some of the actors are better singers. But, man, it's like you spent $38 million and you just didn't. Like, and again, I'm not judging the movie. I like this movie. It's a good movie. But I just, in retrospect, I didn't remember them making the singing just not good. Like, it was just very mediocre. So James is kind to a spider. So there's this big spider that's hanging out in his house, and he's super nice. and like puts it on the web and everything. I was like, here you go, spider. And it's like a black widow too. So it's like, this is dangerous, James. You shouldn't be playing with this fucking this spider. But then he wakes up the next morning after he sang a song and helped the spider, and suddenly the ants are freaking out and are trying to kill the spider. So James fucking rolls out of the building and frees the spider, and takes him to freedom out to the sidewall. And as literally after he sets the spider free, just a second later, a random creepy dude is just like, hey, James, you want to get the fuck out of here?
That's not okay.
It's like, just like he's outside this house. And again, it's a very small set, like this entire thing where it happens. And he's just sitting there, and this guy just is peering over this like brick, like a cobblestone wall that's on the outside of the house. And he's like, you want to come? Look in this bag. I got magic in this bag, which seems like it's going to be his wang in the bag, but it's not. Instead, it's a bunch of, he says, these are magically imbued parts of alligator tongues, which, I mean, it didn't look like that. It just looked like bright green wiggly worms that like are magical. And basically he said, if you use this shit, it'll help whoever it touches will gain magic powers, and you'll be going to New York City in no time. So he's like, oh, sweet. And the guy just gives him this magic bag of beans, basically. And he's like, all right. And he's like, and be careful. Whatever it touches is what's going to be affected by it. He's like, no worries. I'll be very safe. And he turns around and immediately, like, falls down and just spills them all over the place.
That's the way it goes.
And they all go. He's like, oh, no. And he's, like, trying to grab them. But all these, like, big, like, bright glowing green things, like, are bouncing around. And then they just go into the dirt. And he's like, no. He's like, oh, shit. And then the ants come outside and they're like, what the fuck are you doing, James? And he's like, I'm sorry. And then all of a sudden they look at the tree and they're like, hey, this tree's been dead forever. Why is there a peach growing there? And they see this tree, and this tree that like all these green beans had just like buried themselves under. Suddenly there's a peach growing there. And they're like, hey, James, get up there and get that fucking peach. So he's like, all right. And so he starts to go up there, but as he's going up there, it starts growing and just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And this is going to shock you, but it turns into a giant peach, Lisa.
No way. I did not see that coming.
Yeah, the biggest plot twist of the thing is there is a giant peach that comes and exists. And so he's like, this is amazing and awesome, and I'm so glad that my magic that I used did this. And they answer like, cool, we're going to use this to be a tourist attraction. And they do. And a bunch of people come and they're like, I want to see this big peach.
Let me see that big peach, girl.
I want to see that big peach, girl. And so they do. God, that sounded dirtier than I wanted it to.
No, that's exactly what I wanted.
So they're loving it. James is not loving it so much. They're like, hey, James, why don't you go outside and clean up after all the fucking people that were doing stuff? And they, you know, made a shitload of money. So he goes out to check it out. And it turns out there was one more magic bean thing there. And it jumps inside of, he's getting ready to eat a piece of the peach. He just takes like a little handful of it, which is weird. And then as he's doing it, one of those beans jumps into it and into him. So he bites the peach piece and it comes into him. And then suddenly a magic portal appears in the peach and it's going leading inside of the peach. And he's like, all right, I'll climb inside a peach because that's what you do.
Sure. Normal next step.
So he just starts climbing in, and as he's climbing through, suddenly he turns into claymation. And he hears voices as he's climbing through the inside of this massive peach. And when he gets to the center, he sees a bunch of giant bugs and a spider. So inside of it, he sees a cricket, a ladybug, a black widow, a centipede, and an earthworm, all of whom are speaking English. Because that's what happens, because this is a fantastical world. Mm-hmm. And so they're all inside of this peach, apparently. So they must have gotten affected by the magic or whatever and somehow got inside of this peach and are living there. And, of course, they're all very chill, especially because the Black Widow's like, this dude's tight. We hung out once.
This dude's
tight. He hooked me up and he let me out and let me not die. And he's like, thank God I saved that spider. I'd be fucked right now. And so... as they're inside of this thing, they're talking, the ants come out and they're like, oh shit, we got to get out of here. These ants fucking suck. And they're like, yeah, they do. And so the centipede goes to the top of the peach and chews up the like root that's holding it in place. And the peach starts tilting like and getting ready to like fall over and crush them. And so they run to get into their car and they're getting ready to go. And then the peach just crushes the car and then just keeps rolling. And we do see that they aren't murdered. Like they're still alive, but the car is completely crushed. And so the peach keeps rolling. And all of a sudden we see finally James emerges from the peach and they're in the ocean on a giant peach floating.
As you do.
Yeah. So a bunch of different things happen, including the first thing of which is that the giant earthworm that they have, you know, they all have characters and their personalities. The centipede really kind of steals the show, who is Richard Dreyfuss, and Susan Sarandon as the Black Widow. And then the other ones are kind of like, they're fine characters. But they use the earthworm to lure a bunch of birds. Because, like, how are we going to get to New York City? Because he told them about New York City and how great it is. And they're like, fuck yeah, let's go there. And so they shake the worm up so that a seagull will swoop down and try and bite him. And then James, just with, like a rope, just, like, grabs the bird and just ties it on there. And then now, like, he has a bird, like, pulling the thing. And so he just keeps getting a bunch of birds. And they get all these birds to basically pull the peach and fly it. So he ends up catching upwards of like 150 birds who were all carrying this fucking peach, because apparently there was a giant metal shark that was going to churn them up and eat them if they didn't. So high risk, high reward. They got out of there. If you're thinking this, Andy, this is the most insane plot summary of all time. It's not
pretty insane.
This just the story is fucking insane. So as they're traveling, amongst other things, they're like immediately turning on each other because they're like, hey, we're going to starve. We've been out at the sea for so long. I can't believe I'm so hungry and I'm going to fucking eat you. But then James is like, hey, guys, we're literally on a fucking peach. And so he just like grabs a bunch of peach and shows it to them. They're like, oh, this shit fucking rules. This is amazing. Which I'm like, why were they in the peach to begin with if they didn't know it was edible? That's so wild to me that they were just in it, just hanging out. Not to mention that the Black Widow would definitely not eat peach.
She probably doesn't seem like the type, but yeah.
She just like sees, like, she's like the ladybug eats it and she's like, oh, I'm going to eat the ladybug now. But but she's chill. So then they sing, once again, they sing a bad song.
Yes, my favorite.
A mediocre song about random things and how much they love peaches and eating it. So they wake up and they're super lost. Everything's cold and frozen. And they're like, hey, Centipede, didn't you say that you've traveled the world? And he's like, okay, so I might have exaggerated. I lived in a National Geographic. And they're like, what the fuck, Centipede? And my question to them is like, you guys are enlarged and giant right now. And that's the only reason you're doing any travel whatsoever.
Right.
It's wild to think that you would think that this centipede has navigated the oceans before now.
Yes. Yeah, there are a lot of assumptions being made here. Yeah. Yes.
So they're all pissed at the centipede, and so for whatever reason they need to go into the water. I lost track, and all of a sudden I look back for like I look away and then look back, and the centipede's now under the water, and is being tortured by a bunch of skeletal ghost pirates.
Okay, that escalated quickly.
And my thought during this was I was like holy shit, it's Jack Skellington, and the captain, I was like, that the captain of the ghost pirate ship looked exactly like him. And we'll get to the trivia later because there's not a whole lot of trivia, so I'll just say it now. It literally was the exact same model of Jack Skellington that they used, because it was Tim Burton put it on, so that's why it looked like him.
Very cool.
So it looks like the centipede's gonna die, but suddenly he emerges. They went down to try and help him, but they thought, oh, we lost him and he's gone. But he comes up and he's victorious. And everybody loves him again. They're like, oh, you're alive. We love you. Thank you so much. I guess he helped save them from the ghost pirates. Again, I kind of lost the thread there for a little bit. So they make it the rest of the way to New York City. They're almost there when suddenly they see a giant rhino cloud. Like the one that had murdered his parents, apparently. And James is on there and pulls a Home Alone of, I'm not afraid anymore. And as they're there, the peach gets struck by lightning. All the birds fly off and the peach just plummets from the sky. And as it's falling, everything goes dark for a moment. And then we wake up and James is climbing out of the peach, and suddenly it's live action again.
Okay.
And James is like, where the fuck am I? And he's like on top of the peach, and he's looking around, and he sees like a bunch of buildings, and he's like, well, I'm in New York City, but this doesn't look like New York City at all. Where's the fucking Empire State Building? And it turns out he's on the Empire State Building. It was punctured by like the needle on the top of it or whatever. And so just it's the Empire State Building with a giant peach on top of it. And so everybody in the town is like, look at that. There's a giant peach on the Empire State Building. Get the biggest crane we got, boys. And so this giant crane that's the size of the Empire State Building just shows up all of a sudden. And this guy's like, come on, kid, let's get you off of that. And again, this is live action again, so everybody's real at this point. Which is why it's even wacky. Because when it's claymation, it's not that weird. But when it becomes like real people, everything gets real wild. And it's very clear this is not current era. Like, this is like in the 40s, it seems like, when this is going on. So they come and get it down, and apparently everybody's super nice. Like the guy who comes and helps is like, come on, kid, you're going to be okay. Let's get you out of here. And then they drop him down and they bring him and the peach down to the ground. And then literally the second he gets down, like after there's this cop that's like, we're going to take care of you, kid. And then as he's saying that, a car pulls up, a completely flattened car that's filled with water and trailing water behind it, and it's the car of the ants.
What?
That was ran over in England across the ocean. And the idea is that they drove, apparently they're like, fuck you and that peach, I'm gonna go get it, and they just drove through the ocean.
That's also, what the hell
they
happened
don't
to
they
your
don't
movie?
Acknowledge it or say anything about it. They show up and they're like, I guess they're wet, so they must have just driven through the ocean.
What the hell was your movie?
Whew. Anyways, it was an acid trip.
You should have taken acid for this shit.
Yeah. So the ants are trying to take him and the peach back, and technically they have a right to it because they're like, hey, literally, we're literally this kid's guardians, and we do own that peach. And the kid's like, no, they beat the shit out of me, and they suck. And plus, anyways, I flew this peach across the ocean with seagulls and giant bugs, and everybody's like, man, this kid's full of shit. And it's looking not good because, like, you know, legally they've got to give him back to the ants, even though the cop's kind of like, man, these ladies suck. And then suddenly the bugs show up out of the sky and are floating down. And the spider ties up the ant ties them up in, like, webbing or whatever. And all the people standing around are like, this is good. I like this. I like the part where the ants get tied up.
Oh, boy.
Because you have to know, there's like a crowd of like hundreds of people like gathered around this peach in this whole scene. So anyways, the spider encases the ant, and the officer's like, wow, look at that. Anyways, let's get these guys out of here. And they're this kid doesn't need guardians, so we're just going to let him go, and the ants can go fuck off. So after the police decide that this kid can live with a bunch of bugs, the kid says at like 1 a.m. because it's super late, just in the middle of the night, hey, everybody, why don't you eat this peach? And they're like, okay. And so they did. Just all these people on the street just decided to eat the peach. And
that's not hygienic.
Yeah, it was not a great thing. I mean, it literally flew through the sky with a bunch of birds flying over, presumably shitting on it constantly. It was in the ocean. It's several days old, at least. I mean, probably weeks old.
People were living inside of it.
People were living inside of it. I mean, there's so many issues. They never addressed the fact that there was a peach, a pit inside of it in the movie until they ate the whole thing and there was a giant pit. And then they took the pit of the peach and they turned into a house and they lived in Central Park. And so they lived happily ever after. James living with a bunch of bugs in Central Park inside of a peach pit that was turned into a home.
This sounds like the kind of story I tell my children at bedtime, where I'm just going to start and see where this goes.
I don't
goes.
Know. Yeah, you're just like, I don't know. This is some bugs come, and the ants are the bad, but they're there, and they drove across the ocean.
And I forgot to address the pit from earlier, but there was a pit in there.
There was a
and
pit
it
wasn't in there.
There earlier,
it wasn't
there
earlier,
sure.
But it was there for sure, I promise.
And yeah, and people got tied up, and some people really liked that.
Yeah, what about, Mom, but what happened to the kids? Did the kid just live by himself? No, he lived with the bugs. It's fine.
It's fine. You can, too.
At some point, the spider was probably like, man, I'm really hungry. I'm going to eat this kid. But I mean, in the meantime, before that happened, it was great.
Yes.
So anyways, this I only had a few things from the trivia on that. So one of them was the Night Before Christmas thing about Jack Skellington.
Yes.
The other one was this film took 12 years to reach the screen.
12 years?
Roald Dahl was convinced that this property would never make a viable film. It wasn't that it was like, I mean, they just, the movie had been pitched and it was out there and it was like ready to be produced and it just kept getting pushed off for so long. And it just took so long for them to finally get somebody willing to do it. Because again, it's a fucking bonkers film. And it's absolutely hard to imagine how to do this film in a way that would be commercially viable. And not just constant claymation. I still think, I'm like, you could have just made the whole thing claymation. But I guess apparently it was going to cost too much if they did just claymation. So they decided to do some live action.
I cannot believe this.
Yeah. According to the newspapers at the end, the movie took place in 1949. That's okay. The trivia. That's the end of the story.
Well, wow.
James the Giant Peach, the end.
What the hell?
And that's the thing is, it was, and I'm bad at describing it, and I intentionally, obviously, sensationalize and make things sound weird and crazy. But I mean, like, I didn't have to do much to make this one sound wild, gang. It was just it's a wild story. It is better than I made it sound, but it was weird.
Is it?
I will say this, it was a short one, and that was much appreciated.
Yes, I will give it that. I think my movie was like an hour and 40. I don't remember, yeah. But it was like, it went by pretty quickly because the acting really was good. DeVito, I think, was the director.
No, I think yours was a better, in my opinion, was a better movie. I like Sounds Matilda like better. It. It's a more potable thing for just anybody. James and the Giant Peach, you probably had to read the book and be like, I'm excited to watch the movie version of this.
Other than that, you're like, what the fuck is happening? Other than that,
you're like, why? What happened? Why did you lose? What happened? Anyways.
What special butter did they put on my popcorn at the theaters? Listen, thank you for that, Andy. It was a good suggestion, too. It was a good court case. Thank you. Appreciate that very much. Above all, we're happy to have you back, good sir. Happy to have you
back. I'm happy to be back.
Well, guys, that's the end of the show. Let me go ahead and take us out for you real quick. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at 90s Court. Mm-hmm. Instagram Instagram, 90s.court, words, patreon.com/90scourt. We have some good back episodes there for you. We get stickers and cool shout outs as well. Don't forget that we have our super rad merch store.
Apparently.
I guess. There was one week about 3 months ago where I was like, I have some free time. I will do another design. I did one mock-up. I didn't like it, and I never returned to the table again. I was like, well, maybe one day. But the graphic design isn't my thing anymore. It used to be. But teepublic.com/user/the90scourt. And as always, if you'd be so kind to give us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes and Podchaser, that would be the bee's knees. Pardon me. Yawn snuck out of nowhere. Holy moly. Andy, do you have any special remarks to take us out, sir?
Y'all are beautiful. I love you. I'm so happy to have you in my life.
Yay. And good luck to Andy because your grand opening is next Saturday. Is that right?
Booyah.
By the time the next episode is up, he will be a proper open for business, small business owner. Yes, I'm doing the marching band thing right now. Yes. So stoked for you. Good luck on your opening. It's going to be so great.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, I'm not saying it's the inspiration for this. It's weird that it wouldn't be, but it isn't. Stay rad, you rad lads out there.
Hell yeah. Bye, guys.
Good night.